I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, we took a break for our Memorial Day because we wanted to. But now we're back.
Yeah, it's always when those holidays come up, we just use it as an excuse to like not record an episode that week. So it's like, that's a holiday. Arbor Day, man. We gotta respect Arbor Day. Come on, trees. We all like trees. Let's take a week off.
And it's funny because we're so consistent weekly that when we do miss an episode, I inevitably get messages from people going, is everything okay? Yeah. Yes, it's fine. We took a break for a holiday. It was a holiday. We figured no one would be listening anyway. Give us a break.
Well, it's a good sign because that means people are listening. This week, we're joined by K.D. Edwards. He is the author of The Last Son, which is out through Pyre right now. K.D., thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, is this your debut novel?
This is my debut. Yes, this is my first novel. Not necessarily the first novel that I've ever written, but it's the one that is heading out into the world.
Dun, dun, dun.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's rare that your first novel out into the world is the first one that you've written. Well, if I may ask, how many, now I know they may not be completed, but how many novels have you written prior to this one?
Well, there is a locked drawer in my desk, which is the graveyard of failed ideas, and no one will ever know what's in it.
We don't need to know what's in the drawer, but where's the key? Where's the key?
Yeah, no, this is the first, I did a lot of what I would call practice novels before I got to the point where I was ready to tell this story. I really put a lot of time into kind of learning the art, but this is a novel that I've been working towards. How about that?
Sounds good. Now, maybe you can give our listeners a little snapshot of what this novel is about so they can be inspired to go and purchase said novel.
Absolutely. Though one thing I've learned since it's on the track of getting published is how frighteningly bad I am at describing it in 100 words or less and how good reviewers are. So I will try to kind of put it in synopsis form, but it is modern day fantasy. It reimagines the idea that Atlantis has always existed. And when it was revealed to the world back in the 60s, there was a war between humankind and Atlanteans. And this takes place in the modern era after all that is behind them. They've relocated to the island of Nantucket and built this incredible patchwork Gotham called New Atlantis. And the story focuses on the tales of a fallen prince named Roon. He's the last prince of the fallen Sun Court, and he tends to pick up odd jobs here and there with his lifelong bodyguard. And this is the first novel in the series.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, that sounds great. Now, have you always been interested in Atlantis as a concept?
I don't know if I would say Atlantis. You know, it's funny, when I first told people I were doing this, people would like narrow, like, what sort of research did you do on Atlantis? You know, well, you don't exactly pick up an encyclopedia entry and look at their customs and their people. I think the attractive thing of Atlantis is that you can do as much world building as you want into it, because obviously there's not much out there. But the idea of lost civilization, yes, that has always appealed to me. I love reading stories like that.
Have you? I'm a huge Stargate fan, and I really enjoyed Stargate Atlantis back in the day, and I enjoyed their sort of take on it. I don't know if you ever watched any Stargate Atlantis at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's again, I think that is to your point of you can use that idea of a Atlantis, of a lost civilization, to tell a lot of different kind of stories. Because obviously they did it as Atlantis is a flying city that, you know, could be on any planet. And it was the ancients and all that stuff. So, I always really enjoyed that. I have to go back and rewatch some Atlantis.
You just created a mind fuck for me, John, because it just dawned on me that Jason Momoa was on Stargate Atlantis.
He sure
and
was.
Now he's the really bad Aquaman.
Oh man, I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
You're right. I didn't think about that either, because I obviously knew he was on Atlantis. That's the first thing I saw him on. But yeah, and I know he's Aquaman, but I just made the water connection there as well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So, I'm just curious from KD. So you were able to essentially build this Atlantis as your own.
Oh yeah, there was room for a lot of creativity there. That's for sure.
That's awesome.
Cool. And this is out through Pyre, which we're always happy.
We love Pyre.
Pyre always has a special place in our heart because I know you said you had listened to some of our earlier shows. They were kind of the publisher that we worked with first, like in the first year of the podcast.
Yeah.
Lou Anders was our first, who has not been a Pyre for a long time now. But he and I became online friends even before I started doing the podcast. And so when we started, we didn't even plan on having guests, but I asked Lou to be on the show because we were friendly. And the next thing you knew, we had like every Pyre author from, I don't know, however long ago that was, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that. So as I always joke, we were sort of Pyrecast the first year that we were around. So we always have a special place in our heart for Pyre authors. And I'm looking at the cover of your book, and Pyre always has awesome covers. Do you know who did your cover art?
I absolutely know who, Micah Epstein. This was like a charm process getting the book published. Everything went well, but the one thing out of every possible thing that I was dreading from the moment I even wrote the book to thinking I wanted to sell it one day was, what would the cover look like? And Micah he's brilliant. I mean, what he did is he spent time with me. He let me explain what I thought of the characters, and he ran with it. He read the book. He came up with his own metaphors. The characters look exactly like they did in my head. I could not be happier with it.
That's wonderful to hear, because that is not the experience that every author has with their covers.
Oh no, I was worried it was going to be something like, you know, just like shirtless, something that you'd be like kind of hiding the cover on a subway, you know, so that people couldn't see what you're reading. But I am thrilled with what he did with this, and for the next book too. He did two at once.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Before we go there,
John, I just want to say, you know, I miss Lou. And it's just horrible that he is stuck in mediocrity having to write a Star Wars novel. I mean, just the burden on him, that's just terrible, you know?
He's falling on hard times.
Poor Lou. Poor Lou.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. Yeah, he's writing like the Han Solo, like it's a
Stories of the Millennium Falcon or something like that, right? Is what it is, yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to have all our old friends that are now writing Star Wars books on the show so they can
not talk about it. I can talk about anything except the Star Wars book. Great.
Yeah. But that's great, Katie. I'm glad to hear that you've had that experience with your cover and the publishing part. Before we get on to our next segment of the show, I want to thank everybody who is backing our podcast over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. It helps us give you a good product every week, except for holidays, Arbor Day, all of that. But pretty much every other week, you will get a show from us, and we appreciate the support. And if you enjoy interviews with folks like KD, please consider backing us. You could do it for $1 a month. You could do it for a couple dollars a month, whatever works for you. Hopefully, if you get some value out of the show, you find cool new books like The Last Sun that you read and enjoy because of our podcast, and other kinds of things. Just consider becoming our backer. We really appreciate it. It's patreon.com/functionalnerds. And now on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And KD, why don't you go first and tell us what your pick of the week is?
I've been recently overly saturated with sci-fi, so I picked up the mystery novels that J.K. Rowling wrote under a pen name, Robert Galbraith, and I have been reading those back-to-back. I absolutely fell in love with them, so my pick of the week would be the Cormoran Strike series.
How many books are in that series now?
3, and I hope more, because where it ended, I definitely want to read another one, but I it's rare that I read things back-to-back like that, and I just inhale them.
Awesome. Now, when they first came out, when the first book came out, it wasn't public knowledge right away that it was J.K. writing them, correct?
No, it wasn't at all. Though some people guessed that it was a pseudonym, because a lot of reviewers said that these are just way too well written to be a novice author. But I'm pretty sure that she wasn't attached to them for a while.
She was trying not to be. She was trying to see if she could write without people knowing who she was.
Yes. And just to enjoy the experience of getting published again in a different genre.
Correct. Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and how now are those marketed for adults? Is it also YA for that? What's sort of the marketing plan with those?
Definitely not YA. It's definitely okay. Adults, but it's just it's clever. I mean, it actually kind of engages your brain. She does leave clues along the way. So if you really think it through, you might be able to come to the conclusion yourself. Really quirky characters in the background, like most of her writing is. I really was a joy to read. I did not expect it because the way the cover art looks in particular and the name of the series, like for it almost sounds like a Cinemax special, like the Cormorant Strike series, but it was probably just one of the best things I've read recently, mystery wise at least.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, I will have to check them out. As listeners know, my son and I are midway through the Harry Potter books. It's the first time that I'm reading them too. So we're on Goblet of Fire right now. So maybe after those, I will go and read some of those other books. Sweet. Awesome. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week is Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Ooh. And no spoilers.
No,
haven't seen it yet.
I'm going to give a spoiler right now because I have to. At least now we know what happened to Jar Jar Binks, that he was eaten by Ewoks.
Okay.
And you know, I'm gonna add on a bonus pick. So I got to see Star Wars the Solo Story on opening day. I took the day off and went and saw it with a friend. Enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun with it. And then I read just yesterday, as we're recording this, that the novelization of the book is coming, and it will be written by our very good friend Mer Lafferty. It's
yes.
actually already
nice.
Been written. It's already been written. She's already turned it in. It'll be published this fall. So when we talk about our friends who are having these great successes, you know, Delilah Dawson is a good friend, and I've hung out with her at conventions. Chuck Wendig is a good friend, I think, and he may disagree. I don't know. But we've hung out with him at conventions and conferences. Too. You know, Kevin Hearn is an awesome individual, and now Murr and Lou, you know, all these people are getting to write these Star Wars novels. And I just want to say, God damn it, why not me? LucasArts, do you not know I'm sitting right here? Come on.
If you can write Patrick a Star Wars book, like who would you want to, like what characters or what time period or what
I don't care. I don't care. Right. Just let me write something, please.
Katie, question to you. If you can write a Star Wars book, what would be your time period? What would be your characters? Like, what would you want to do?
Oh, I'd probably go back to Knights of the Old Republic. I love those games.
Yeah.
I mean, I like especially where it ended. Like, it felt like there was so more that could have come after it.
Well, now, if we're going to be serious, John, if you want me to actually be serious about this, I was just when I saw Solo and I was talking about that the novelizations and different things, and someone actually asked me at the time if I could write anywhere, what would I like to write? I would like to write before there were Jedi and Sith.
Ooh. Okay.
When they were just Force people. Because we kind of know, spoilers, as you're going through the main trilogy of new movies, we kind of know that the ideas and the concepts of Jedi and Sith developed over time. And there was a time when before there was Jedi, because there's books that teach you like the Jedi way, right? So there was a time before there were Jedi and Sith. I would like to explore that time.
That's interesting. I don't know if Eve or maybe KD, maybe you read it too, but there was that Ken Liu wrote that book, the Adventures of Luke Skywalker, or the Tales of Luke Skywalker, and the whole idea behind that book was kind of all these vignettes of Luke, and it was supposed to be a little bit of, you're not sure if this is really happening or if this is kind of a tall tale being told about Luke, which I thought was an interesting way to frame the book. And there's some silly stuff in that book too. So it's, I can't fully recommend it because there's some silly stuff in that book as well, but they do explore these ideas of the Force pre Jedi, pre Sith as an idea. And like Luke visits this one water planet where they talk about the Force as a wave, you know, as a tide, that kind of thing. And the locals who are Force users are, you know, they ride the tide and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was interesting. So it's been explored a little bit. in the books already. But that's interesting. So Keith, Katie, you were saying that you would do a Knights of the Old Republic one then.
Oh, absolutely. I remember that was probably the first time I came back to gaming after years of not, playing games at all, playing Knights of the Old Republic on the first Xbox. And I just got sucked right back into that world.
Yeah, that's one that everyone always tells me about. I know a lot of people love that one just for the story. And I know they put that game out even on like an iPad and stuff that you can play it now.
But it's also on Steam. So if you have Steam, you can play it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And that's the rumors with the Benioff and Weiss movies, the Game of Thrones guys doing the Star Wars movies. That's the one that people speculate about, that they're going to go back to, and not necessarily tell the game story, but do something in that, 4,000 years before the original trilogy kind of a deal.
Yeah, and even that was set, even then, by then the Force and the Jedi's and the Sith had been around for God millennia. So I mean, even that was almost like in the middle of the history of the entire storyline.
Right. But it'd be cool to see that for sure. My pick this week is an app, and it is the new Google News app that just launched about a week or two ago. And I like having these blog reading apps, and I use Feedly because there's no Google Reader anymore, which I wish that was still around. But I find the new Google News app to be very slick. You can sort of follow certain topics. You can upvote or downvote things that come in your feed. It will give you news stories based on some of your searches too, which I have to get my son and my wife their own Google sign-ins because they're screwing up my feed, man. Screwing up my feed. But that's something I've been thinking about for a while. But beyond that, it's very cool.
I like pictures of Chris Hemsworth without a shirt coming up in my feed. <know. laughs>
So what is up with this? Barring that, it's pretty good. But that's actually something I've been looking into anyways, like trying to get them their own little sign in so that we can all sign into Google separately, because I find I've just become, after having a Pixel 2 now for a couple of months and various Google services that I use, I'm so tied in that system that I really want to not have other people. I mean, I'm joking around about it now, but it would be a lot nicer if it would be even better if it was only me who is putting input into Google for the news app, for YouTube recommendations and all that kind of stuff. So that is my pick this week, is the Google News app. Do either of you guys use that? Katie, what is your news reading app of choice?
iPhone.
iPhone.
Yeah, iNews. I've been relatively addicted to that ever since I finally switched over to iPhone.
Yeah, I liked the Apple News app a lot when I had an iPhone. I had an iPhone up until this past January, and that is the one thing that I do miss from having an iPhone, is that Apple News app. I really like that. And the Google News app is not that far away from it in terms. I think I still like the Apple News app better, but this is definitely, you could definitely see I don't want to say necessarily copied Apple News, but it's similar ideas. And how about you, Patrick? What do you use for your news reading?
So I typically use just Safari, and I go to news.google.com. However, and now I'm thinking that they've changed it, and I'm thinking they changed it for the app, and I don't like it anymore. I don't like the changes that they've made to news.google.com. It's become a pain in the ass, and you can't, you don't see the stuff that you used to see, at least I don't. And then I also use Feedly. So I use Feedly for specific sites that I want to see. What I don't like about the news aggregators anymore, especially Google, is that they are trying to learn your preferences and only show you what you want to see.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is then you only see a certain perspective. And if you are looking at news through a specific ideology, all you're ever going to see is stuff that supports that ideology. I want journalism. I want facts without the political spin. You know, I want to see news stories and I want to be exposed to things that I would not normally see. And with all the algorithms, the it's getting further and further away from that, and that really bothers me.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that's been an issue certainly in the past couple of years for sure.
Well, yeah, absolutely breaking out of the bubble.
Yeah.
Well, Katie, I know we altered our time a little bit today because you were at a writing retreat.
Yes.
Is that where you were at? Well, would you care to tell us a little bit about that? Or?
Yeah, it's a writing retreat in the sense of it's a group of friends who I have formed a writing group with. We've been together now about, 7, 8 years. If people were to ask me what the number one thing that brought me along as a writer, it would be this. It would be having a group of friends who were familiar with my writing, my novel, the story structure, following me from the beginning, giving feedback, and even more importantly, you learning to give feedback to other people and then using it to kind of spot the opportunities in your own writing. But it's a really good group of people. It has three of us are published right now. Everyone else should be published and hopefully will be published. But we, every now and then, we just get together randomly and go somewhere for a weekend and kind of balance off writing and talking and having fun. And it was just excellent weekend.
That's awesome.
Now, you don't have to tell us specifically where, but what kinds of places will you go to? Do you set up at a hotel? Do you go out in a cabin in the woods? Like, what do you guys typically do?
Do you know what KOA campgrounds are?
I don't.
My aunt and uncle owned the KOA campground in Tucumcari, New Mexico for many, many years. So I am familiar.
They're all across the country. Well, that's not what we did this time, but normally we go to KOA campgrounds, and in the last, I don't know how many years, they kind of went into glamping, you don't actually have to like drive up in an RT and pitch a tent, but they've got these cabins that are stock like 5-star hotel rooms. But this time, actually, we went to a golf course in North Carolina where we rented condos, and actually turned out really well. There was a lot of space and nice area, and it was just a great weekend. It's especially I really needed this because I'm on deadline for my second novel. So as much time as I have to write and focus on it is important.
Did you play golf?
Not even on the computer, no.
Okay. I was going to say.
Yeah. I come from a golfing family. My father is a golfing addict. My mother's picked up golf. My sister golfs. The only good thing about golf is that whenever we would do something as a family, they would go golf. So I had that guaranteed 3 hours. And if I was feeling social, I could grab a 6-pack and actually drive a little cart around. But that's my limitation to golfing.
In my other life, I'm the director of digital marketing for a company that teaches people how to play golf.
Oh, I would need a lot more help than just I would need something like a clone body that has sporting interfaces.
It's cool that you go and you have this good group of friends and you can go and do that. I've heard of a lot of different people doing that. I've done it myself with my writers group. We went up to Estes Park a couple years ago.
I love Estes Park. I have been there quite a bit.
It's gorgeous. And if you get it in the right time of season, it's not too cold, not too hot. You're kind of outside the touristy season. You can get good deals on cabins and houses and condos and stuff up there. And like everybody just pitch in and pay for the whole thing. And then you get good food when you go in town, you know?
I had friends who worked at the YMCA camp there, so I used to go up every weekend when I lived in Colorado for a year.
Nice. And when my aunt and uncle had the KOA, they had the area where you could tent, put up your own tent. And they didn't have – well, maybe they did have a couple of little cabins. But they also had single-wide trailers that people could rent as well. And a lot of times the even cheaper one is Good Sam's Club.
Ooh, I'll have to look into that.
Because Good Sam will give you a cabin with a mattress on beds and usually like bunk beds and maybe a queen, and you bring your own sheets and pillows and stuff.
Oh yeah, the KOA glamping cabins. I mean, they've got like sheets, dishes. It literally is like a hotel room. I mean, there's definitely a sense of the hardcore people pitching their tent kind of give you the side eye because you're sitting on a rocker on a porch and with like an actual mug and, utensils behind you. But it's really nice, expensive, but nice.
there was this whole incident where my cousin worked for them and worked there. And he saw a family come in and set up in the tent area. And he also had this weather app on his phone, and it was telling him that this, you know, huge storm was coming in. And he was thinking to himself, he needed to tell them that the storm was coming in because they were going to have to do something with their tent and get everything kind of set up correctly. And he goes into the main office area in the little store, and he asks his mom, he's like, do those people, they booked a tent spot? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, well, where are they? Because there's a storm coming in. And she says, well, they're out in the pool. He says, okay. So he walks out, and there's a dad and a kid in the water, and a woman sitting in a lounge chair. And he walks up to her, and he says, excuse me, are you in tents? and she looked at him and said, what? And he goes, are you in tents? And she kind of leaned back, and she's like, I don't know. And she's kind of looking at her husband in the swimming pool, who hasn't noticed this yet. And he goes, well, it's kind of simple. Are you in tents or not? And finally, like the husband kind of comes out of the water. He comes over and he's like, is there a problem here? And he looks at him. He's like, no, I'm just trying to figure out if you're in tents or not. And he goes, no, we're not. He goes, you're not in tents. No, we're not in tents. And he's like, okay. And he goes back inside, and he goes up to his mom. He's like, no, those aren't the people. She says, what are you talking about? They just rented the tent space. He says, I walked up to them and asked them, are you in tents? And they said no. And she busted up laughing. And he realized it sounded like he was saying intense instead of intense.
Is there a good end of this story? Or I mean, did
yes,
he goes
back out laughing and explaining everything to them, and then they laughed, and he helped them get like everything set up so that they wouldn't all get blown away. But that's like my that's like my favorite KOA story ever.
Nice.
Anyway,
nice. So now, Katie, you know, where were you in your writing process this weekend? Because I know that you are a heavy outliner. Are you yes. well past the outline part this weekend, or where were you in terms
I am well past the outline part for novel two.
Okay.
Well past the deadline point of submitting novel two, but I did turn in the first 40,000 words to my publisher, and they were very, very happy with it. So they're being patient with me for getting the rest of it out. But it's and also we finally set the date for novel two is going to be in January. So I've got a little bit of time, at least this month and next, to finalize things. But by the time that's done, it's the writing is usually it's not even so much writing the first draft. It's just putting the meat around a very long outline.
And are you one of the incredibly intelligent, productive, forward thinking authors who use Scrivener, or are you one of those Luddites that still use Word?
I still use Word. I did finally move from using like journals to Excel to actually store my brainstorming notes, so that, you know, I got to the point where I had a stack of journals that went up to my waist, and I'm like, dude, one fire and I am done. I am out of it. Like, I am out of this business if I lose this stuff. So I've got to digitalize it. So I am now at least cloud based.
And not that I have an opinion on it.
Well,
Scrivener versus Word.
I hear that. And especially for someone like me who's an outliner, there's so much synergy between the different stages of writing. I keep on meaning to look into it, but I always find myself staring down the barrel of one deadline, whether contractual or self-imposed. So we'll see what happens after I get done with novel two.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
now
shoot me an email and we'll talk.
Good.
Yes. Patrick is the Scrivener guy. He's like
people.
Written all these things about it. He's done workshops and stuff. So if you need to learn it, Patrick's your man. Now, what does your outlining look like? Because it sounds like it's pretty intense. what's typical outlining? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call it back.
I think that there's always the, what do they call them? Like pantser versus planner. For me, outlining is just the way I write. And when I talk about outlining, I mean, I'm halfway through novel two right now. I probably get another 60,000 words to write, and I've got 40,000 words of brainstorming notes. So, I mean, I am ridiculously detailed. I want to do 9 novels in this series. I know the theme of, I have hundreds of thousands of words of notes on, you know, one-liners, character descriptions, settings, the plot, the villains. I I think the reason I like Outliner is because anytime something occurs to me in daily life, and anyone who's a writer can tell you this, like you can't even walk down a street without, you know, kicking yourself because you forgot to bring a piece of paper and a pen because something occurs to you, a leaf falls down from the sky in a weird direction and you want to put it in writing. But anytime something like that happens, I've got these like 9 novels set up and each of them have a different theme. So there's always a place I can put a note that occurs to me. There's always a good storyline I can attach that note to. And then suddenly over time, it's like, well, crap, I started off with just a couple pages of notes and all of a sudden I have 200,000 words.
Now, with the you were saying earlier that you had them as paper journals and that you're now digitizing them. Is that the way you typically do? Do you start with like a paper journal and then sort of transfer it over to the cloud? Do you use like index cards? Like, how do you organize it all these days?
Well, you know, the deciding factor is an extreme amount of laziness on my part. It finally got to the point where I had 9 journals and as much as I love the brainstorming process, sitting down and typing that into a computer, I just never seem to get around to. And I realize I need to start working with my laziness and I'm not against it. So now I take notes directly digital. Either I'll like dictate an email to myself on the phone and then email it to myself and then just cut and paste it later on into an Excel chart. There's a new technology coming out on, Kickstarter that I invested in. And I actually should be getting it soon where it's supposed to, I press a button and it captures my voice memo and translates it to text. I'm always interested in that speech to text technology. But I need to do something like that because if I'm waiting for myself to actually take a journal of notes and translate it into something usable in the future, I found myself sorely disappointed.
Have you ever looked at Dragon Naturally Speaking?
That didn't work for me. Try it. I think the technology has probably improved a lot since I first used it. I mean, what version are they on now? Back, I think maybe I had it when it was on like Dragon 8. They're well past 12 now, or 13 or 14. They've got to be. But I know that all I know is that the technology on my phone is incredible. I mean, the first time I did it, I'm like, why haven't I tried this sooner? I mean, it literally, it even seems to learn. It catches when you're writing science fiction, it's kind of hard to capture the nuances of some of your world building terms, but at least my phone seems to be there.
Yeah, it's interesting that my iPhone, at least now, I noticed with one of the sort of kind of recent updates, maybe in the last year or so, now does a transcription of voicemails.
Nice.
I don't know if you've ever seen that. Like when I get a voicemail and I click on it to listen to it, it expands it out and gives me a transcript first. And then I can decide whether or not I want to listen to it.
I did not know that. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
I know that used to be a service. That's baked right into your phone now, Patrick?
Yeah.
Do you have a specific app that does that? Or
no,
is it just
your it's just my iPhone voicemail.
That's interesting because I love that because it's very rare that anybody even leaves a message anymore.
Yeah.
So I never actually, because I don't know, think about our lives with our phones now. We always have our phones with us and most normal people just text. Like who's going to leave a message anymore? But sometimes you do get calls that you do have to listen to. And that would be great to just be able to read it. Because honestly, the only kinds of times I have voicemail messages that I have to listen to, oftentimes it's either some kind of spam that I don't want to deal with at all, or it's something very important. It's like my son's school calling because he's sick. Where they're not someone that's going to text, or it's like my dad who can't text, who is leaving an important message for me that I need to get. So it's either crap or really important. So that would be really nice to be able to read those text messages while I'm at work so that I don't have to like put my phone up to my ear and listen to it, where I could just glance down as if it was a text.
Again, I want to say it's relatively new. Like the last year or so is when I started noticing it, but it's in your voicemail. So when you go to voicemail on your iPhone and you see all the voicemails there and you want to hit one to listen to it, when you hit it, it actually expands it now and gives you this little transcript before it even plays.
I am definitely going to look into that because my non-confrontational attitude pretty much extends to even listening to a voicemail, let alone leaving one. So a transcript is like a nice buffer between associating with the rest of the world and giving me the option of whether or not I want to.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, Katie, you were talking about, you know, your writing and all the kinds of different things that you've done. And Now, would you categorize your writing as being sort of part of an urban fantasy? Would that be kind of where you're headed?
Yeah, now, very much.
Now, who are some of the authors that in that genre that, you know, maybe had a little bit of influence over you, and how so?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question, because one of your podcasts, you were talking about the television show Preacher, but I don't think at least one of you had not actually read, or you read the first graphic novel collection, but not the series. That I think my introduction to sort of surreal modern fantasy was Preacher and Sandman. Those series kind of opened up my interest in taking the world as we know it, but adding this really edgy supernatural element to it. And when it came to books, I mean, at the beginning of the genre were people like Laurel Hamilton and Alona Andrews and Jim Butcher, and still read those to this day, Patricia Briggs. But lately, it seems sometimes urban fantasy has been, it kind of exploded so much that people hesitate to even use the genre name anymore. That's why I kind of say modern fantasy most of the time, but it's gone off in so many different directions and subgenres that I don't know, there's just a wealth of things to read right now. But yeah, definitely the beginning part of my interest in even writing something like this was probably graphic novels.
Cool. Now, first off, on the Preacher front, so have you watched the TV series, and what do you think about it if you have?
I think that enough time has passed since I read the Preacher series that I didn't feel like I never do that sort of fanboy thing where if they're not you know, true to the source material, that I'm going to storm and leave a million comments on a website. So it definitely went in its own direction. And I think that's fine, because the cast on the show is absolutely amazing. I mean, really rather stunning, and production values are high, and it's creative, and it's edgy. It's just not necessarily the same as the source material, but I liked it. I like both. So
I like that. I haven't watched it yet, but I like that sort of tactic in these, you know, translating books or graphic novels to TV, because that's what I actually enjoy about The Magicians, because that has gone way away from what has happened in the books. It's basically just using the book's world and characters and then doing something pretty different. And I like it. Now, funny enough, my father-in-law read the books too, and he does not like it. Like, he does not like that they've gotten so far away from the book. So I guess it just depends on how you feel about these things. But I think that's perfectly valid to go in a totally different direction. And sometimes it's better, because maybe trying to shoehorn a book or a trilogy into a TV series isn't the best way to go.
I agree entirely.
Yeah. Now did you, I didn't read this one, but I know this has been coming out, but with Lock and Key, have you read that graphic novel series?
No, but it's sitting actually next to me right now on the pile of books I have of to be read pile. I do those Reddit gift exchange, and for one of them, it was a graphic novel gift exchange, and that's what I got. I haven't read it yet though.
Yeah. That's the one that everyone always talks my ear off about. It's like, you gotta read
Lock and Key. Is that Joe Hill too?
Yeah, that's Joe Hill, as far as I know.
And I love him as a writer, so I think that this would definitely be something I'd be interested in.
Well, the reason I bring it up, because I know Hulu originally ordered a pilot adaptation of The Lock and Key, and they declined it. They made a pilot, and they didn't want to pick it up. But now Netflix has picked it up, and I think they're just going to start over with it. So for people who
they're going to redo the pilot with new actors and everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of Netflix. I don't know if you saw, Netflix announced that they were going to be focusing more on science fiction and fantasy content.
I am thrilled about that.
Yeah, because essentially there really is no home for science fiction and fantasy on television right now. There's no single channel that is dedicated to that kind of content.
Well, I think that's why
they're willing to make those changes.
Yeah, that's why there was the outcry when The Expanse was canceled. It's just that.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we have. We want more of it, but don't take away what you've already given us.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I know the reason. I know that's been the Sci-Fi Channel's MO for a long time. And my understanding is it's almost because the creators of that show signed a deal in a way where they had much more control over the rights, and that's why the Sci-Fi Channel didn't pick it up again because they only had the first run rights. So if it wasn't making a lot of money with commercials on that first run, the Sci-Fi Channel wasn't making any money when it went to streaming. So I'm very happy that Amazon picked that up, and we're going to see a fourth season moving forward with that one as well, because that would have been a shame. I'm assuming, do you watch The Expanse, KD?
I watch it and love the books, so I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking with a friend the other night about it, and it's, I think, a no-brainer that Amazon did it, because it's like, here you go. You're in season three now, and it's essentially been not even a book a season. It's been a book per season and a half. And yeah. I think, what are the books up to, 7 books now? So you have at least 7 seasons. If really, that's probably going to be more like 10. And I think there's going to be 2 more books in the series. I think it's supposed to finish at 9. So you're talking over... So this is not going to be a Battlestar Galactica situation where they're not really sure where it's going to end and how it's going to go and how we're going to wrap this up. It's, oh no, this is all plotted, planned. You have excellent stories for 10 plus seasons to tell here. You know, if you put the budget in, this is going to be a win for you. No doubt. I don't know how you feel about that, KD.
Oh, genuinely. I mean, the quality has not vanished. I don't know if you read the last book, but the last book actually it's a jump forward in time. So it opens up a whole new, you know, avenues of exploration of the characters and the world, and the quality of the writing has always been incredible. I'm also, from a writer's perspective, I'm fascinated with how two authors came together and created this.
You know that it was a game.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. An RPG, right?
Yeah. 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 And the two characters of Holden Miller were the characters that they played.
Yep. And we were just actually, believe it or not, talking about it this weekend, that someone said, hey, I have this game. Do you want to play it? And the other one did it and said, you know, you've essentially done all the world building of creating an entire series. And, yeah. And then they just went forward to, you know, do the novel from there. But thank God they did.
Yeah. And I believe that's how it kind of shakes out, that Ty Frank does. And as I think everybody knows that listens to our show, that James S.A. Corey is Ty Frank and Daniel Abraham. And that I think Ty Frank did the majority of the world building. And I think now they get together and they sort of work out the plots and all that kind of stuff. And then Daniel Abraham does the writing. I believe that's how it works out. Patrick, is that what you're aware?
I feel like they trade back and forth.
But that's interesting that it started from a gaming RPG. Now, Katie, I know you do some gaming RPGs. Now, does that have an influence on your writing?
I think my entire world is built around the concept of what it look like in a an open world RPG. I love, because the main character in my novel, Rune, he's a fallen prince. He has access to, great hereditary ability, but you've got to come up with limitations to it. You've got to come up with a way to put boundaries around a character who could otherwise come across as omnipotent. And RPGs are a great way of doing that. I mean, it's all about managing your resources and what to do when you run out of them, and to challenge yourselves for situations where you run out of bullets or spells or whatever it might be. Especially lately, it's just been like golden era of RPGs. So, and with truly amazing storyline as well. So yes, they absolutely influence me.
Are you familiar? Have you read the Brandon Sanderson books? Because I know that's very like sort of magic system driven, which I don't know if he comes from like an RPG background either, but it's a similar idea of placing limitations on these, what are essentially superpowers.
Yeah. I haven't read his entire series. I read the first one with forget the name. I'm awful with names and remembering and recall and pronunciation, so I apologize in advance. But I have read his first novel, and it was the one about where they would consume slivers of metal. And the different types of metal he's one of the things he's incredibly well known for is world building. I'll say that.
Yes. Yeah, but it's that idea of the magic system with limitations. Because then I remember we've had authors on, and I know Peter V. Brett, who we had on in the first couple of years of the podcast, I remember he's sort of a comic book guy too. And I remember him saying that, yeah, this is kind of a problem because I've backed myself into a corner because I essentially, you know, made one of my characters Superman. And how am I going to work around this now? Because I've sort of established that he has this power, and how do we make this compelling now? Because now it's just like, well, why doesn't he just fly? He could just fly out of there. Why not do that? So you think that sort of the RPGs sort of influenced you in a way in sort of reining all that in. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I know where I want the series to start, my series, and where I want it to end. And I know there'll be an escalation in his abilities and also the people he faces off against. So I can't really take it past 9 novels because I'll run into that problem. But I did try to pace myself with the development of his abilities throughout the entire series.
Well, here's a trick. If you find you have a problem, is that you can do a Timothy Zahn thing and you can create the Ysalamiri, those creatures that just... you know, you can't use the force then. I don't know if you remember that from
yes.
That, because that's a great work. I'm just thinking back at that. That was so funny. It's like, look, we got to get rid of the force here. We get rid of the force. Okay, well, we'll make a creature that sucks the force use out of you. Yeah, that sounds good. That'll work. Yeah. It was 92. What, we were starved for Star Wars. We'll take what we get. Although I do love those books, but
I did like the Zahn books, yes, too.
Absolutely.
I like
that. He's got the new Thrawn book came out a while ago, but there's another, a second Thrawn canon book coming out, I believe, in July. So I'm certainly looking forward to that for sure. So looking forward, KD. So now this is book one. Now you said you just turned in book two. When did you say that book two was going to?
I turned in the first part of book two, but I'm still finishing it. But book two will actually be on the bookshelves in January 2018. The first book is out, a week from Tuesday.
Okay, so the first book is not out yet. Then what's the release date for the Last Son then? June 12th. Okay, so this will be a week advance for people to go and pick up the book. Now, are you going to be doing any appearances at conventions to help get the word out there? Is anything like that coming up for you?
Probably maybe over the course of next year, I'll start dipping my toe into it. But for the most part, I'm not. There are authors who are really good at that sort of thing. And then there are authors like me who, I'd like doing podcasts, doing panels, love that whole concept. But throw me in a room and say, hey, go introduce yourself and tell people you wrote a novel. And I'll just curl in a fetal position on the floor. So I'm going to need to kind of just ease into that whole con scene.
Yeah,
I think.
Patrick's done more con stuff than I have. I've been to con, though I haven't gone in quite a while. I think there are pros and cons to it. It depends on what you're looking to get out of it. But my experience with cons and my sort of, I guess, observation about cons in terms of business and spreading the word, I think it's a mixed bag depending on the con and depending on what you're looking to get out of it. If nothing else, I think they are very good for building community and for getting yourself as part of that community. But I don't know if one is looking to go to a con and expecting, like, I'm going to sell an extra 1,000 books from my con's, you know, appearance, I don't know if that is really the case. And I feel like I've seen some people having an unrealistic expectation like that going into cons. And so, especially if you're doing them on your own dime, I don't know how worth it. I don't mean to disparage cons. I realize I'm just like basically shitting on cons right now. And that's not my, my point, but I'm thinking it's like, I don't think it's that big of a deal that you necessarily go out and do, you know, 20 con appearances next year. Patrick, what's your feeling about the cons and go? I know you like going to cons, but do you feel like some people have unrealistic expectations about cons?
Yes.
Yes. There you go. Patrick's going to be very diplomatic and just say yes.
Well, no, I'm just saying, it can cost you a lot of money. Like I think I've been very open with, I really enjoy Worldcon. I go to Worldcon. I've been to Worldcon quite a bit. I've missed a couple of years now just due to family stuff. But a trip to Worldcon for me is roughly $1,200. when you factor in airfare and all this kind of stuff, and you're eating that, right? So yeah. If you itemize on your taxes and you're listing yourself as an author, great. You know, you're basically helping yourself on your taxes, but you're not making any money at a WorldCon, trust me. And a lot of people go to WorldCon to have business meetings with agents and editors, trying to meet agents and editors, trying to get yourself published. That's what a lot of those literary conventions tend to be about. And then once you're established, you know, and a lot of times you also go to your local con, right? So I go to Mile High Con, and I'm on panels there, and I love the people there, and I love the people who run the con. And they're always very kind to me, and I do whatever I can to help out. And, you know, that's just about kind of building the community that you talked about, John. But a lot of times the majority of that is just meeting the other writers in your area.
Yeah, I will say that I do have a good friend, Scott Rankin. He wrote a young adult trilogy called Nixia. Second one's about to come out. He's gone to a lot of cons, and he's kind of tempered my expectations. The one thing he said is, yes, you're going to find out not only is the networking with authors good, but they are no less anxious to wade into a mob of people necessarily than you are, which you can take shelter with them in a bar. So,
yeah. And then when you actually have stuff to sell, it's like you could get a table somewhere and try to sell stuff, but now you're having to deal with, you know, you've got to have a merchant account of some sort. You have a Square, and now you're tied to a table trying to sell your stuff. So that gets a little bit difficult. And a lot of times what I've heard from established authors is once you have a few books under your skin is when you start hitting Comic-Cons and Dragon Con and places like that, where you do actually build an audience, right? And now you're getting fans, and you're getting people interested in your stuff. So it's definitely a progressive track that you're on. Mm-hmm. But I see the same 10 authors at Mile High Con every year with booths set up trying to sell their stuff. It's like the same 10 authors. And I talk to them, and they're like, yeah, I'm just not selling anything this year. Well, it's because you've been here 10 years in a row. And everybody who comes here have been coming here for 10 years, and they've already bought your stuff, or they've already passed on your stuff. So it's like, I don't know what expectation you have, but that's not great. If you can do something like the Tower of Nerd that Wordfire Press does, which is everybody gets together and kind of co-ops it, and you've got the big names drawing people in, like Jim Butcher, like Kevin Anderson and different ones, and those are the folks that people are coming to see and get autographs from and buy their books, and then you happen to be there as well, right? That's kind of good for you.
Yeah, I think I'm also really, I have an excellent agent, Sarah Megabaugh of KT Literary, and she's very realistic about asking, you know, what are your strengths and weaknesses? What do you like doing? Because you're not going to sell any books by doing something that's not in your danger to do. So at this point in my life, I feel like I've got 9 novels to write, and this is my focus. I want to start building a library of works, and then reaching out digitally through people, that's something I'm very comfortable with doing as well. So I think for the most part, that's going to be my immediate line of attack in getting myself out there and introducing people to my characters.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Katie, best of luck with the book. Once again, it's The Last Sun. It'll be out June 12th through Pyre. Now, I know Pyre tends to do the the trade kind of paperback. Is that how it's going to be put out for you?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah, those really with a nice glossy kind of cover. I always really enjoy those from a physical product point of view. I'm assuming it's going to be ebook. Is there going to be an audiobook as well?
There is. I have a contract with Audible.
Ah, fantastic. Excellent. Now, is that going to be out June 12th too? Is that going to be down the line a little bit?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it's down the line a lot, but don't quote me on it.
Okay. Awesome. Well, everybody be on the lookout for all 3 of those as they're going to be out soon. So best luck with all that. Your Twitter is at KDEdwards_NC. Your website is KD-Edwards.com. Anything else that you want to let our listeners know before we wrap it up for the day?
No, just thank you for having me. It was really nice talking to you.
Oh, likewise. And once again, for us, if you dig what we're doing, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
Well, speaking of conventions, if you are in the Denver area, I am going to be at Denver Comic Con. So they have me on three panels. Comic Con is June 16th through the 18th. And I am on two panels on Friday, one at 11 a.m. That is the 80s resurgence in books and comics and TV shows and stuff like that. And then 1:30 p.m. I'm on, believe it or not, a horror panel called Letters from Hell. And then on Sunday at 10:30, I am on a panel that's talking about the first steps in self-publishing. So as we talked about, you know, this is definitely about just trying to get my stuff and my book into the fire in front of people who probably haven't seen it before. And Comic-Con's a great place to do that. I kind of knew the rooms at one point. I don't remember what rooms we're in now, but you can look at that up on Denver Comic Con's website. If you're planning on be there, I'd love to see you. You know, just come by and say hey.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.